Girl, I left behind me while we're in here.
Thank you. My father, when I went to a contest, a fella played a few old tunes there that everybody knew, and like I'm doing, pretty well butchered them up. And Dad said, I'm going for the grandeur, the common grandeur when starts, and I'm going for the grandeur. And I said, what for? He said, I'm going to see if I can die in business for butchering up music. It's when you're not playing, you know, the way you have played before, it's tough to do when you know what you're doing, when you know you're missing all the notes, which I'm doing.
She wanted to know how old you were when you started playing.
Oh, I was picked out about 12. My grandfather was, and my father both was, all good old time fiddlers. They played those old time tunes. What you mostly like to hear at this day and time is Father Back for the Day You Like Him. Jay, what do you want to try?
Let's see. Pretty close to Cumberland Gap tuning here. Want to try that one?
Yeah, we might try that.
Thank you.
apparently knew a lot of the real old-time fiddle players. If you are into West Virginia fiddle playing, probably the most revered fiddle player that ever came out of West Virginia and Central West Virginia was a man named Uncle Jack McElwain. And Ernie heard him play quite a bit as a boy, I guess. And I think maybe you said your father took you up to his place when you were just a youngster.
Yeah, he was. Uncle Jack was a real old-time fiddler. He this may sound funny to you fellas, but I told Gary about it. And the thing that tickled me after I told Gary about it, and I know he didn't believe it, well, we went, happened to be up at Erbakin, and we went to a fellow's house that had learned to play under Uncle Jack. And I told Gary when Uncle Jack played, you just felt like you were floating, just felt like you just floated up off your seat. And of course, Gary, he took that with a grain of salt. And we went to this fellow's house where I learned to play from Uncle Jack. And the first thing he said, when I introduced Gary and told him that I'd been telling him about Uncle Jack's playing, and he looked at Gary and he said, when Uncle Jack played, he said, you just felt like you were floating. That's just what I told Gary. So that backed up my word pretty good, and I was proud of that. I was proud to hear Harry tell him that. And Harry was a good fiddler himself, but at that time we couldn't get him to play. Well, he had quit playing. He'd been sick and he'd quit playing. But Harry played the most of Uncle Jack's tunes, the nearest like Uncle Jack. Of course, he didn't play anything. Anyways, near as good as Uncle Jack, but he actually played him more like Uncle Jack than anybody else I ever heard.
Who was this your speaker? Students.
His name was Harry Scott.
This fellow was a regular. He worked for the band over there for years. He actually was a fine fiddler. I got to hear him before he got past playing. And he did play a lot of Uncle Jack's tunes, an awful lot like Uncle Jack played them. But I never heard anybody play that I could say that was as good as Uncle Jack. Never heard nobody.
To give you an idea of what this fiddler was like, in 1894, he got on the train in Webster County, West Virginia, went out to the Chicago World's Fair and won the fiddle contest. He wasn't any slouch, I guess. Never was recorded. And I think he died in 37. Was it that late?
Back along there somewhere. But there wasn't. If only Uncle Jack would have got to tape to his tunes, he'd only got to have made a record. But back at that time, the only people who got to make a record was somebody that already had, a lot of money to finance it and so forth. And Uncle Jack never got to, if you had tapes in that day and time like you have now, the people who got a tape of Uncle Jack's tunes, why, he knew, no telling, probably 100, maybe more, good fiddle tunes. That when he died, they died with him. They were gone forever. That's bad. That's bad when you lose it. When you lose any song, any hymn, or any fiddle tune, any kind of music, it's bad when you lose it.
Ernie, I wonder if I dropped your E string down into that G tuning, you tried maybe Betty Baker and Indian Nation, some of those. You want to give them a try?
I like trying, Gary. I don't know what kind of a job I'm doing.
Ernie, what county did Uncle Jack?
Webster County. Webster County. Erbakin, Webster County. Erbakin is a little country town, a couple of stores,
Did he have any kids? Did Uncle Jack have any kids to play with?
He had one boy, but he never took no interest in music. Oh, I think he maybe, I never did hear him, but I think maybe he got to it. I saw a little bit, but not never very much. He didn't take no interest in it. The only interest he had was another bottle.
Another bottle?
That might have been the cause of him not learning, because he just didn't try.
Great fiddler like Uncle Jack would play at square dances, and that would be pretty much where you'd hear it, wouldn't it?
Oh yes, Uncle Jack never played much for square dances. He didn't.
Not much?
Huh?
Where did you hear Uncle Jack?
To his house and heard him play, and then I heard him play out places where he'd be playing.
You saw him at a school program one time.
Yeah, he used to go down and play for school programs, last days of schools, or any Christmas doings or anything like that in schools, or any place at picnics and so forth and so on. Like I told Gary, I said, when you went to a contest, well, it's damn time. You go to a contest today, and everywhere you hear people going, well, wonder who gets first prize, this and that and the other. I said, you never heard that when you went to a contest where Jack Wayne was. Everybody was there and knew Jack Wayne, knew who was going to get first prize for the contest was there. That's true. He was just that much better than anybody else. There wasn't no such thing as a chance of a tie or anything like that. If Uncle Jack was there, well, that was first class.
What made his playing so different?
Huh?
What made his playing so different, so much better?
He said, what made his playing so different, so much better?
Oh, he was so smooth. He'd take that bill and he caught it right down at the frog. And he went down there to the end of it and back. Just like the Petron Ocean using a fiddle bow. Never saw nobody use a fiddle bow like he did. Most of the time he had his little finger around the end of the bow. And he run that bow from one end to the other. He had extra long fingers. His fingers weren't big. His fingers were more like a woman's fingers. They run out there like lead pencils. He could run go down that bridge with that little finger and never move his hand. Just reach down there for a note wherever he wanted. Like I've told Gary many times, I said it was very misfortunate to younger musicians coming up that Uncle Jack never got to make a record. Tape, I mean, what was it, the thing of tape in that day and time, and only people that had money to put in it got to make a record, and Uncle Jack didn't have it, so he never got to make a record. And when he died, why, dozens and dozens of tunes died with him that never will be heard again, forever lost, and that's bad.
Did he play a lot of tunes that no one else played?
Oh yes, he played a lot of tunes. My God, he could sit and play for you all night and never play the same tune over.
Where did he get his tunes?
He got the most of his tunes from Saul Carpenter, a relation of mine. Saul Carpenter.
Did he continue to learn new tunes?
Yeah, Saul Carpenter is the fellow that played his way out of Army prison camp. They decided, the officers got together and they decided they had quite a few fellows that played the fiddle. And they'd have a contest. And the fellow they decided was the best fiddler, he gave me his freedom. And that's what he did. He went his way out of Camp Chase.
Ernie, you've lived through the development of radio and television. And I've seen all kinds of changes in music, and music not all of a sudden going from being a local thing to hearing all kinds of music and Arthur Smith and all and kids listening to rock and roll and stuff like that and bluegrass. What was it like when all of a sudden you started hearing people being interested in the old stuff again?
You mean any change in the style of playing?
In other words, what was it like to you in terms of, I would imagine that the old styles are being lost, and then all of a sudden people like Jerry were coming around and trying to get, you know, learn the old music.
Well, I don't know.
Did you understand? He said, "What is it like now in your later years when you started to come up to Augusta and you saw all these people interested in the old time music again?"
Well, I think that's great. I really do. I think it's great because it kind of brings back interest in the old type music, the old time way of playing. I see a lot of youngsters. And I really enjoy that when I see it. But I see a lot of youngsters that's playing those old tunes way back 100 years back or more. And like I say, I think that's wonderful. I think that's great. It's the tunes that they had back in the first place, for my judgment, I think the tunes that they played back in them days is much better music than the tunes that they have come along with in later years.
I'd just like to say a little thing about McIlwain. I was talking to an old fellow I think Ernie knows, named Herbert Blake, who's 87 now, and he played with McIlwain some. And I was talking to him about Jack McIlwain, and he said he'd get mad if he didn't play any of these new tunes. He didn't play Trouble Among the Yearlings and them new tunes like that. He said he played the old tunes. And he made a really distinction among tunes that everybody would consider old-time tunes today that I've considered old-time tunes, you know. He made a real distinction about what McIlwain considered old-time music and not old-time music. And Trouble Among the Yearlings and tunes like that, I guess, that became popularized with 78 recordings, maybe, or maybe even before that, at least in the 20s, anyway. I think I've got this in the... Want to try Betty Baker or some of those?
I dropped that one.
I dropped it in.
Yeah. I haven't played Betty Baker for a second going on. I'll try.
Okay. Thank you.
years ago, was it easy to get a fiddle? Was it easy to get a hold of a fiddle?
Well, not really. Not as easy as it is today. Because there weren't but few fiddles, and people that had them, most of them played them. If you seen a fiddle sitting around the man's house, 10 chances of 1, he can play it. Of course, he knew I wouldn't part with the fiddle, but he just kidding me. He walked over and he said, "I want that fiddle." Well, I said, "That fiddle come pretty high." "I don't care," he said, "how high it is. I want that fiddle." Well, I said, "I'd have to have at least what my father paid for it. I don't want to lose no money on it." And I said, "I'd have to have what he paid for it if I let you have it." Well, he said, I'll try and come up with that amount." "How much?" I said, $1. And he didn't know about that, of course. He knew it was my father's fiddle, but he didn't know anything about what my father paid for it. He got a big kick out of that. That's what he paid for. He had the fiddle, and he gave it to my grandfather. My grandfather was a great old-time fiddler. And he put it around, and my father's younger brother, my uncle, he got a hold of the fiddle and took it out and sold it. Took the money in his pocket. And I think he sold it for $2. I ain't sure, but I think that's what my father said he sold it for. Well, my father found out who had it, and the fellow had it. He paid for it. And he wouldn't go to nobody had that fiddle unless he got his money back. So my father worked for, I believe he said it's 50 cents a day to get the money to go get that fiddle back. It's a hot. It's black all over. I never thought of it in any place because it been in the family for way over 100 years. And I just won't take it out because every time you go out, well, you take a chance of getting an instrument stolen or getting it busted up or a lot of things could happen.
I've always been interested in Ernie's fiddling and Ernie's family's fiddling, and one reason is because Ernie learned tunes off his grandfather, learned tunes that his grandfather played, and his grandfather was born in 1830. So it seems like here it is, 1980s, and you can still hear a man play who learned tunes from a man who was born in 1830. It seems pretty incredible. Well, Ernie, talking about fiddle players and the area where Ernie lives, We sat down one day and we just started counting out fiddle players that Ernie's known in his lifetime in that area of Braxton County. And then I went on and talked to Melvin Wine. And between the two of them, just talking about Braxton County fiddle players, they knew 137. That's how many fiddle players these two guys have played with just in Braxton County. They were all Braxton County residents. So there was quite a bit of fiddle playing in that area.
Young people, it used to be that a fiddle was about everybody's favorite instrument. If they tried any kind of music at all, they wanted to learn to play a fiddle. But anymore, they want to play a guitar. And because the younger people, they watch this rock and roll stuff, and they kind of go for a guitar. But I'm still a fiddle man myself. I always did like a fiddle. It always was my choice instrument, and it always will be. There isn't any instrument that anywhere near comes up to a fiddle.
Is there any modern music that you do like? Hmm? Is there any modern music that you like?
Oh yes, I like any kind of music. I'm just a natural born music lover. I like to hear anybody sing, whistle, anything, and play anything that's play. I enjoy music of any kind.
Have you, Ernie, have you written any tunes?
No, I did one, but I never got out. I still have I never got Gary learned to play it. Enough people learned to play it to keep me going. Well, I got the one I call Hook River Blues.
Can you play it for us?
Yeah. Pardon?
You want to play Elk River Blues?
Honey, I... Oh, no, I forgot to tune up. I might give you help to get an idea.
I'll have to tune that string back up, then, I think.
Oh, yeah. I was sitting one day on the porch, on the cell. And I went and got the fiddle out, walked out on the porch and sat down, started a song. First thing I knew, I was on this tune, and I stopped, and I started thinking that I never played no tune like that. It was something different, and I played a little bit more of it until I was well convinced that I never played a tune like that, and that thing just come to me like that. So I played it for Gary when he came around. And he named it. He called it Elk River Blues.
Try some up in the high key.
I don't know, play Jimmy Johnson, Sour and Low, maybe.
Ernie, do you prefer to play with a banjo or a guitar, or is there some tunes that you like just playing without any other instrument?
Yeah, I usually play with whoever's around the place.
Yeah. You like that the best?
I just like music, period. When I was starting to learn to play music, most of the people around in my area were older people, been playing, you know, for quite some time. There weren't anybody, there was very few kids like I was playing at that time, or even trying to learn. Older people who could play, they didn't, outside of my father, they didn't make no difference how hard we'd worked or whatever. At night, when we went to bed, he'd say, get the music out, and after we began to play, they were just in their own place. But there's a lot of people that don't like to be bothered. They don't like spending time with you showing anything. They ain't got time to fool with you. That's your problem. They ain't gonna learn you a note or learn you a tune. They ain't got time to fool with you. You've got them kind of people. We have them in our community, and I'm sure you got them in yours. I don't know of any community that don't have some of them. But do you know something? I've had people come to my place, and I know what a time I had. Of course, my father was a good old time fiddler. Now, he never had time or never took time to sit down and ever play a tune, you know, for me. He'd sit down and play a tune, or a few tunes, just like we'd sit down and play, you know, maybe three or four tunes, get up, put the fiddle away. Whatever I caught, I was fine. But whatever I missed, he didn't have time to show me anything. But I always had an ear caught whenever he got the fiddle out. I kept the fiddle away, had a big, we called it a safe. We had about five shelves and it went clear up to the ceiling. And he kept the fiddle laying in the top shelf so his kids couldn't get a hold of it. And he had Lady Mark Rawson up there. And somehow or other he got broke and was laying the fiddle up there while he break a little more off of it. Pretty soon he had it broke down fine. And that Rawson was hard enough to scratch the varnish on the back of that old fiddle of his. And one night he was playing, he noticed it. And he said, "What the devil's hard that fiddle?" And it wasn't true, you know, just enough that you could see it. And he went looking where he had that fiddle laying, see if any of us kids would do anything else. Lucky for us, but he found out what done. But I never take his fiddle as a hawk. It's a good old thing.
If I understand your question, Pete, one thing I've noticed about Ernie, he always told me years ago at a fiddler's contest, you weren't allowed to have any backup. Like a fiddler's contest was a fiddler's contest, and you didn't play banjo or guitar, you played the fiddle. And one thing I really appreciate about Ernie is he never seems to be afraid to just play the fiddle all by itself. Whereas, you know, a lot of fiddle players I know, they'll hardly play a note unless they've got a guitar or a banjo or something to.
That's true, Gary. I'm glad you said that here before all these good musicians and everybody. Because that's true. That is actually true. There's people that, if they don't have a backup, they can't really take a fiddle and play you a tune. I first got to fool around with the fiddle. And then my brother, he got to fool with the fiddle. And then, had an older sister, and she played the banjo, pretty good banjo player. And my younger sister, well, I got to playing the fiddle, my brother, he kind of took to the guitar. Well, my younger sister decided I was going to play the fiddle, my brother was going to play the guitar, she'd play the banjo. So that's the way we played. And at one time, not because it was us, but at one time, we didn't do too bad. The three pieces, fiddle, banjo, and guitar.
Ernie, do you have any children that have taken up music?
No, I love children, but my wife loves children. But we never had the good fortune to have any children.
Do you think you play differently when there is backup than when you're just playing by yourself? Does that make it play different when there's a banjo or a guitar than when you're just sitting?
No, I play the same unless somebody wants to play slower or faster. I sit down to play with people and they'd say, play a fast one, like a square dance tune or something like that. And well, others sit down and tell you, how about playing a hymn? Well, whatever anybody I'm playing with wants to play it by, that's the way I play. The way I try to play. Here's an old tune that's a real old one. It's a tune that I like, one of my father's old tune called Jimmy Johnson. Yep, I can play it. Thank you. think Tom actually believed. I thought for a long time that he just was sort of kind of, you know, just sort of kind of done it intentionally. But I know that he actually believed that he was the best fiddler in the world. He did play pretty good. Gary played that. He was a pretty good fiddler. He played all them old-time tunes. And but Tom, he got to going around and he'd play, go someplace and play for some kind of doings. And the first thing he did, he'd tell the people there that he was the best. He was the world's best. And he didn't hesitate to tell them. And
he called himself the cornstalk and bagpipe fiddler. I know that.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of stories about him. He played with two bows a lot of the time. He played with incredible drones, a few tapes I've heard of him. And he danced while he played. He kept up a pretty steady dance.
He came to my place one time. I told Gary this. Came to my place one time. I lived in Carsburg. Right in the, if you ever have you ever acquainted with Carsburg, I lived in the broader section of Carsburg. And he come in about, oh, it must have been about midnight when he come there. And so we always tried to see him. Tom was a good kind of fellow. He was run a little strong on his bragging on himself playing the fiddle at times, but if you knowed him, why, you didn't pay attention to that. And we was always glad for him to come because Tom was a pretty intelligent fellow, nice fellow to talk to, and nice behavior somebody. And we always glad to see him come. And we'd already went to bed, my wife got up and fixed him a bed. Next morning, oh, I don't know about it, way before daylight, I heard a rooster crow. And I thought, my God, where in the world is that chicken at right here in town? And I heard him again. After a while, I heard two roosters crow. And a little later, I heard three roosters crow. And I told my wife, I said, where in the world? Where's them chickens? Where could they be? She said, I don't know. And so we lay doing this, and them chickens are crowing. Never got up to go outside to check or anything, and I thought, oh, well, somebody had some chickens around. But I wasn't going out that time of the night to say anything about it. So the next morning at the breakfast table, I said something about hearing chickens crow last night. And Tom, he laughed, and he said, yeah, them are mine. I said, where are they at? Oh, I said, I left them in the car. He'd been up in Webster County, up in his home community there, and somebody gave him three chickens. And I think two of them were roosters. And anyway, they really done some crowing. And I said, my God, man, I said, it's one of the laws out here to check on, wonder to God if somebody on the street had to call it a law. Because I know I wasn't the only one them roosters kept awake for crowing. And so he just took them out there. They went on crowing, had them in the back seat of the car. And I'd had to clean up that car after he got to Pennsylvania. Got the chickens in there 2 days and night. But that's the kind of guy he was.
Just a normal fiddle player.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could play that piece your dad made up, Cliff and Jenny.
I don't know. I haven't played that tune. Gary, but since I've been along, I think I forgot. Thank you. here, I think we're getting stiffer instead of limber.
Maybe you want to tell them about that piece, Flip and Jenny.
I forgot that.
Flip and Jenny? That was your dad's girlfriend, wasn't it?
No, that was her. I think I forgot it even. The story, I mean. About the squirrels? About the squirrels?
Yeah, yeah.
Little story about my father when he was a young fellow. He was dating a girl and she was very fond of squirrels. She loved squirrel meat. She did, my father was a fine hunter, so she got out and go kill her mess of squirrels. And he was working. Told her he didn't have time to kill squirrels. Had a job to do. So she didn't let up. She kept on after him to go kill her mess of squirrels. So she told him, finally she said, if you go kill me a mess of squirrels, I'll give you something better than squirrels. Well, he was a sucker, all right. And he went and got the squirrels. Next morning, well, he went and killed the squirrels, brought them in, cleaned them up, took them to him, went on to work. That night, he went to see her and asked about the squirrels, and she'd had them for supper, and she bragged on them how good they were, and it was wonderful. And that's all there was to it. So the next night, he went to see her, and they talked about the squirrel, how good they were, she did. And three or four nights like that, and he said, say, he said, we had a deal about them squirrels. He said, I'm tired of waiting for your answer. He said, now, I got the squirrels. I come up with my end of the deal. And I said, how about yours? She said, you know, Shelton, that was my father's name. She said, since I ate them squirrels, she said, I have decided that there isn't anything better than a squirrel.
How about Liza Jane, right?
You play that Camp Chase? Play Camp Chase?
No, that's not the tune.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if you like it. There you go. You take it and play Camp Chase.
about maybe you get Sheldon Rock, and we'll make that the last one.
Jerry was a mighty furry looking character in those days. what was it like first meeting Jerry, and what were your first thoughts when you saw this furry looking guy driving up your driveway, knocking on your door? And
when I first met Jerry?
Yeah.
Oh, when I first met Jerry, it was kind of a coincidence. I went to play for a Fox Chasers reunion over in the country there from home. And we came back and we had a fellow there in the car with us. We went over there and played. Oh, we must have been over there at about, I don't know, it must have been 10 or 11 o'clock, wasn't it, 11 o'clock? And I was wore out. We'd been over there playing by Fox Chasers reunion out there in the woods. And